Hello and welcome to the Salem Station Podcast. This is the show where we rank and review all of your favorite horror movies. I'm your co-host, Robert.
It's me, your boy, Alex, back again.
Back at it again. And actually, I said we're ranking and reviewing horror movies. It's actually not what we're doing today. Far from it, and not a show either. Today's episode, as you can tell by the title, we are covering Stephen King's Skeleton Crew.
Little late on this one.
Huh?
Little late on this one. Oh my god, I looked up, I'm gonna be completely transparent. I looked up Skeleton Crew just to see like when it came out. Because I didn't have that information. All that comes up is the fucking Star Wars Skeleton Crew.
What's that
show that's coming out? I don't know, and I'm not going to derail this entire episode to find out what this is. It looks kind
of
cool, though.
I was gonna say I never heard of it.
Anyways, it actually looks kind of cool. No, we're not doing this. Wait, the book.
That's interesting. I didn't realize there was a new Star. It's a book, as Alex said. It's a book.
1985. There we go. June 21st, 1985 is when it came out. So we're a little late on this. We are roughly...
Four decades.
I think it's almost 50 fucking years, no?
You're right.
Right? You're crazy.
Oh, you're right.
15 plus...
Because yeah, 95, like 40? Then 05, then yeah. 15, 2... No, it's 40.
Damn. Yeah, it's like 40.
Yeah, you said 50.
I said almost 50.
Oh, well.
40 is almost 50, depending how you count it.
That's true. We're almost 50 years old, actually. We're on our way there, a couple years off.
I'm going to cry after this episode.
But yeah, as Alex said, this is a book. This is the first time we're doing a book on the show.
Robert hasn't read in a long time.
Yeah, that being said, I did read this book quite a while ago. So I'm looking up the specific. So Stephen King's Skeleton Crew. What's Skeleton Crew? It's actually his most widely recognized, or I guess most popular, I should say.
Most hyped.
Collection of stories. Obviously, it's not up there with It or, say, like Carrie or any of these other books, because those are single stories. This is a collection of stories. And there is a total of 22 stories in here. I won't take up the whole episode going into all 22 stories.
Wait, sorry, say that again. 22 stories?
Yes, in this book.
The book is only 500 pages.
And some of them are really short. Some of them are only like 2 pages long. And so I won't, some of them are really short, some of them are quite longer. I'm only going to focus really in on 2 stories. One of them is a big one, and the other one is the reason why I decided to read this book in the first place. And that'll be the second story that I cover, or the second main one. I may sprinkle in a couple of other ones, but there's really 2 big ones I'm going to talk about. And so I'm just going to get right into it. There's no need to have this episode be crazy long because it is just short stories. The first story, this is actually the big one. It is the longest one. It's probably the one that takes up the most space in the entire book. And that's the first story in the collection, and it's called The Mist. And I'm sure...
I think it's a pretty iconic one.
Yes, I was going to say, I'm sure that's the one that most listeners can go, hey, The Mist, I know that, property or story or whatever that of Stephen King's. That is in Skeleton Crew. It is the first story, and it is the longest one. It's the one that takes up, I would say, the most space. It easily is the longest one. It's the big boy one, and it's my favorite of the entire collection of stories, easily. And what helps is, of course, and most people would know about the story of The Mist because of the movie, very good movie. It also helped, like, just having the movie visually play out in my head as I'm reading the book. And it's, by the ways, the movie, it turns out, is very faithful to the short story. Up until the very end, almost a good, I would say it's like 95%. like straight up just the story, which is quite
really.
Yeah, I was surprised. I was surprised by it. So this isn't the first. Before I get into it, this isn't. I should preface. This is not the first Stephen King story I've ever read. I read Carrie. I never finished it, granted, but this is the first. I guess the second Stephen King story that I've read, the first to completely finish. I was only able to do that because I had an audiobook playing as I did my jogs and walks. But it is quite good. The horror, dude, the impending nature of... So you've seen... Have you seen The Mist, Alex, the movie? Or I'm sure you're familiar with it.
No. I'm familiar with it. I haven't actually sat down I'm familiar with it.
That isn't on our list, but we could cover it like whenever you want. Any point that you're like, hey, I want to watch
down to cover it.
That'd be a good one to cover. And if people are interested in even like the book, I would recommend it, or the short story. It's a little longer than some of his other short stories, but it's not like novel sized. Like, it's pretty manageable, and I would highly recommend people check it out. So the gist of The Mist is that there's this family in the small town in Maine, and you know, this storm just came in and knocked things over. You know, it was a pretty wild storm that hit the area, and there's this mist.
Similar to what's going on right now.
Yeah, but very different kind of storm than what's going on right now in out in Florida. I think it's only Florida, right?
No, it's the entire Appalachians.
Oh.
Yeah, entire cities have been wiped off the map.
Yeah, it's pretty bad, it's from what I've heard.
Horrendous.
But
anyways, back to this fictional story.
Yeah, but in the aftermath of this storm, you know, there's like cars overturned and whatnot, and like trees have been broken. There's this like calm. There's this eerie calm over the town. And I hope my listeners didn't hear that loud notification. There's this eerie calm over the town, and the family that we're following, they live across from this lake, and there's this eerie fog that has taken up like the other side of the lake, and people can't look at the houses across the lake because this eerie fog is covering it up. It's this giant like wall of mist, and they're like, oh, it must be some like weird meteorological,
yeah,
like weather,
whatever the fuck.
It must be like some weird weather event or something that happened because of the storm, and they're like, yeah, we have to go to the town to get supplies and, you know, fix things up and whatnot. And so the dad and his son, now there's a dad, a son, and a wife, and I, it's been a while since I've seen the movie. I think in the movie, the entire family goes, whereas in the book, it's just the father and the son. The wife is left behind. And the last they see is them pulling away from the house, you know, driving down into the street and leaving, is seeing their wife, you know, attending to their garden, trying to fix things up. And the mist is slowly inching its way across the lake. It's this very it's this sense of impending doom, and the characters, they don't know why they feel a little tense when they like think about the approaching mist. They don't know that it's harmful. They have no idea, you know, what might be in it. But when they try to tune into a radio station, a specific station that's found across the lake on that side of town where the mist is at, it's just static. There's no noise. There's no, you know, there's no regular, no, you know, music or sounds or whatever they would hear from. They can hear all of the channels on this side of the lake, on this side of the town, but they just can't, for some reason, they can't hear what's happening on the other side. And they're like, oh, it must be like, maybe that side of the town was hit harder by the storm or something, and it knocked their antennas down or whatever. And so they get to the store, and they're buying their supplies and whatnot. And what's so cool is, because I've seen the movie, I'm visualizing like everything that they do. And you're introduced to a bunch of, you know, colorful characters in the storm, a couple characters that is going to be, you know, that are going to be pivotal to what happens and whatnot. like the store owner, this crazy, like religious zealot lady. I forget her name. Mrs. Carmody. Mrs. Carmody. Wow, I'm surprised I remember that. And a bunch of other characters. And it's imagine like what shopping was like during COVID, right? Where there's long lines, the shelves are getting emptied and whatnot. People need to fix up, you know, wires and cables at their houses or their cars and whatnot. And while this shopping area is full, someone screams in the parking lot and runs up to the glass doors and the entryway of the store, and they're screaming, "Something's in the fog, something's in the mist, and the mist is here." And they're screaming and they're like, "It's here, it's here, there's something in it." And they were like, run away or something. And everyone in the grocery store is like, "What? Like, what was this crazy guy like saying? Like, this guy's head must have been, you know, badly hit or something during the crazy weather we've been having." And some people, you know, are curious enough and they leave. You know, there's the usual people that step out and they're like, "Oh, what's going on outside?" Some people don't return. You know, they're just, some people just get in their cars and drive away. And, you know, the main characters are following. They're like, "Oh, we really need these supplies. We really need food. We need to restock. And so, you know, once we're done, we'll get out of here." And then, like, I think the lights are already off, but then everything goes dark. And then the backup generator has to come back on or something. And then, like, you see the mist just envelop the whole, like, shopping center area. And it's just dark. And you hear, and there's, like, this weird mood suddenly. And people are like, "Oh, well, whatever. Like, the mist has finally got to this part of town. It's probably, like, whatever. Like, it's nothing, you know. It's just fog."
Yeah, it's just mist.
And I forget what the first specific thing that occurs is, but I believe in the back near the storage area, one of the characters steps outside to you know, find storage or whatever. And this is in the movie. I remember this vividly in the movie. Tentacles come out from under one of the roll-up doors, you know, where, like, you know, usually people pull in their storage and whatnot. And it wraps around one of the characters. And it's described as this Lovecraftian, like, like you usually think of, like, cosmic horror or whatever, like this appendage just coming out of the vague haze of the mist or whatnot, and it grabs this guy and, you know, it kind of like dissolves or something. It's pretty, and I love the way it's all like described, and it's pretty horrifying. They close the roll up door, although unlike in the movie, I believe in the movie the piece of the tentacle that gets cut off by the roll-up door, like, dissolves or something. In the book, it's still there, and it's, like, wiggling around and whatnot. And they're like, "What is this thing? This thing's pretty bizarre." And then I believe someone runs up to the front of the store with blood all over them. And they're like, "Oh, my God, there's, like, beings out there in the fog. Like, something is, like, something came with the fog, almost like as if the fog was, like something to hide an entity that was showing up." And suddenly the people are like, "Oh, okay, so the grocery store is our safe haven, basically." And our main characters, they start to feel bad because they're like, "Oh, we left, you know, the mother, the wife at home. And, like, you know, windows have been shattered.
All of them.
Like, is she even still alive?" And they're like, "Well, we don't even know, like, what that creature could have been. Maybe it's just one giant creature. Like, who knows?" And they all agree, though, that it's probably best to stay inside than to go out there and figure out, you know, firsthand what's out there.
Yeah, that probably makes sense.
And night comes, and they fortify the glass, you know, the front facade of the grocery store. Usually there's a lot of glass there. They fortify it with, like, stacks of, like, mulch and whatnot. And at night they hear, like, this little, like, picking at the window. And they look out, and it's these giant, like, I don't even know how to describe them. They're almost like giant spiders, which I believe are also in the movie. It's so sick. They're like plump, pinkish-looking spiders, and they're like crawling all over the building. And then these giant flying, like, pterodactyl-looking things, like, you know, start eating these spiders. And they're like, there's a whole, like, weird ecosystem outside. And of course, some of these get into the shop and they have to fend for themselves, and characters die and left and right at the hands of these, you know, horrible monsters. And they're like, dude, there's a whole like array of creatures out there. They're like, what do we do? What do we do? Like, we're losing people. And, you know, they kill them off and whatnot. And they begin to fortify the grocery store even more. And like, it's such a good claustrophobic like feeling that you get, because there's like 70 people or so in the grocery store and they start losing people one by one. And you get the sense of like, food's going to run out eventually, you know, and you see alliances starting to be made, factions in the grocery store. And you see this lady, this Mrs. Carmody, she's when I was reading it, I couldn't help but relate it to modern day politics, specifically, you know, what we're going through in 2024. She kind of up and, you know, she kind of, you know, spoke out loud to the whole grocery store and was like, what's happening out there? Like, there's nothing we can do about it. We're all just going to die. So we should follow what I have to say, because I have the best solutions. And she easily starts forming a crowd, and like people, like it starts off, it's described as like on the first couple hours, there's only like one person listening to her. And then you have two people, and then it becomes four people that begin listening to her. And she's like, this is the end of times. I should be the one to, like, you know, kind of, I can't really put into words what she was saying, but I was listening to it and I couldn't help, you know, like, oh man, like this was written in the 80s and it still fits today's like society, this caricature, a very real character and a very scary character, probably more scary than what's going on outside. And that's what I liked about this book, is the humans are just as horrible as the creatures outside. And so one of the characters trying to create their own faction, which is where our main characters at, are like, okay, well, we have to go to the pharmacy. So it's a shopping center, right? So there's a pharmacy right next door, almost like a little mini version of a CVS. There's people in there, you know, because this happened midday. We should go see what's going on in there. And everyone's at odds. Like, should we go? Should the whole group go? Should people not go at all? And Mrs. Carmody's like, watch, death will come with them. You know, like, they will bring nothing but ruin. Like, mark my words. And so like five or six people go to the pharmacy store, and it's just the store next door. And they're like, okay, it can't be that far. We can't, you know, it's, we'll make it. We'll make it. And so they go one by one. They step out of the grocery store and out into the mist and into the store next door. And the store next door, I believe the door and the window, it's all been shattered. And you just see the dead bodies everywhere. And they're like, oh, okay. So no one in the pharmacy made it out alive overnight.
Something happened here.
Yeah. And they're like, okay, well, we can get medicine. We can get, you know, like equipment or whatnot. We like, people are bleeding in the grocery store. We need equipment. And they go in and they realize that some of those spiders, or maybe they're different creatures, but they're definitely spiders. They shoot out like webs and stuff. And it's like acid webs. And this is also in the movie. And I do remember, I think in the movie they added, though, because it wasn't in the book, that one of them, I believe, either stings you or something. And I think when they sting you, it embeds in you like eggs, and it hatches and it eats you from the inside or something, if I remember correctly, which is horrifying. And so they run out back into the grocery store with like a couple of little bits of medicine that they were able to gather. And like half of them die on the way back to the pharmacy. And Mrs. Carmody is there expecting them with her group, which is now grown. And she's like, see, all of their plans fail. We're in a sticky situation. You guys have to listen to me. I'm the way out. I can help save all of us. And you see this cult begin to form. And our characters are like, oh no, dude, like we are just proving, like we're proving all everything we're trying to do is just going horribly wrong. And it's just amplifying her, like her platform, if you will, of like evil, I guess. And suddenly, before you know it, half of the store's on her side, and they're like, oh, we should just go. And that's kind of, and again, it is pretty short. They eventually end up escaping into their car, you know, swatting away horrors that come at them. They run into the fog. They cramp as many people as they can into the vehicle. And they begin driving out. And luckily their tank is like fullish. You know, it's not an empty tank. So they manage to drive out, and it ends with them stopping at a diner, which is abandoned, on their way to Boston, because it's the nearest big town over, and they don't meet anyone. And on this diner, they just leave a note of everything they went through in the grocery store, and they left it there in case if someone ever passes by, they can read up their story or whatever, or know who these people are at, where they're heading at, and maybe meet them. And that's how it ends. It's like it's a vague, ambiguous ending of whether or not these characters make it. In the movie, which I prefer the movie ending better. And you've not seen the movie. Do you mind me spoiling this? I don't know.
No, it's fine.
Pretty big spoiler.
I think it's pretty well known at this point.
So in the movie, they all end up in the car, essentially, right? The same point where our characters end up in the car. And they have a gun. And there's, I think, like, I'm going to say 5 characters there, maybe. I might have the number wrong. But they have in the gun the amount of bullets. They have one less bullet. They have bullets for every person in the car but one person. So they're one bullet short for every person. And the idea is this fog isn't going away. We should just put ourselves out of our misery. And there's only going to be one person left alive. And I'm so sorry for whoever's going to have to remain alive. We don't know what will happen or become of you. But and so they go through with it and they kill each person in the car but the main character, the dad of the family. And he's sitting there in his car grieving, and he's like, I'm the only one left. I've killed... I should have said spoilers for The Mist, for everyone who hasn't seen it.
I think it's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, and he sits there, like, you know, grieving. And then the military shows up, and, like, the Red Cross and armed forces, and The Mist begins to go away because help has arrived. Like, seconds after... everyone in the car decided to off themselves, and he realizes had they only waited a couple seconds more, there would have been no need for that. They all could have been alive and helped and saved by the armed forces that show up, which is to me a much more better and tragic ending than the book. It's such a, like, because you see these characters make it out of the grocery store and decide to, you know, end it right there and then, only for help to show up immediately after once they've done it. I think that's a much better ending. It's a much sour ending. And I think even Stephen King, when he watched the movie, he was like, oh my god, like, I didn't even think of doing that. Which I think yeah, I do like that quite better. Now, something that is in the book that's sprinkled throughout is, and I believe it is the cause of everything, because, like, people might be listening to this asking, like, well, what caused The Mist to show up in this town or whatnot? Throughout the book, they explain that the government owns this large facility, this large compound nearby the town. And, you know, every now and then someone mentions jokingly, oh, haha, there's this thing called Project Arrowhead, or the Arrowhead Project that they're working on. And it's kind of like Area 51, you know, how people are like, oh, there's this known government facility. Are they really dealing with, like, you know, aliens or whatnot? We don't know. But, like, for sure, there's a government facility there. It's kind of the same vibes like that. And there's always the rumor that they're experimenting with, like, you know, other worlds or dimensions or whatnot. And so the idea is that whatever comes to this town is the fault of the government, that they have, something horribly wrong has gone awry. Something has gone awry at the Project Arrowhead compound. Kind of like Stranger Things, you know, how they open up the portal to the Upside Down, and you know, it's literally that. And I do love that idea that they shouldn't have been, you know, this town is the victim of this large entity that shouldn't have been messing around with, you know, this whatever other realities or something, and now they've opened up their world to cosmic horrors. So that's the first book.
Beyond Comprehension. Yeah, and I feel like it's also an allegory for, I mean, not something similar, but, I mean, the government is always done experiments, whether it be nuclear, radioactive, or anything that has put impacts on, severe impacts on
on society,
you know, local populations, society overall.
Yeah, and true local populations. So it's also a good, you know, analogy for that too. I think that is the best. I was looking up rankings of the various stories online of wow, of what people thought, you know, was the best story overall out of the 22. Most people had The Mist at like number 3 or 4. I think it's my favorite. I guess I can explain really quickly what people thought. What I believed the general consensus was for the number one story. It's the story called The Jaunt, which I think the ending is pretty good, but the bulk of the story I couldn't care for. The Jaunt takes place like 500 years into the future or so. And it's the idea, the Jaunt is teleportation. Someone has discovered teleportation. And the whole story is going over the history of teleportation as this family. It's being told by this dad, the dad of this family that's getting ready to teleport. It's the family's first time teleporting onto Mars or whatever, some crazy, you know, futuristic thing. And he's telling them the story because the son is like a little boy. He's scared of his first time jaunt, you know, the way people may be scared of their first time flying on a plane and whatnot. And so he's trying to appease his fears. And he's like, oh, you know, let me,
you know, statistically, you're more likely to die on the way to the jaunt than during the actual jaunt.
Yeah, it is
stuff like that.
It is literally that. And he's like, so the jaunt, he was talking about like how the jaunt works because, or the way they figured out the jaunt works is they had to put the rats under the, you know, the initial experiments when they were teleport animals, because if you teleport animals when they were awake, they would die. But if you teleported them when they were asleep, you know, you give them some anesthetic or whatever, they would arrive over there asleep, but whole, you know, like normal. You just wake them up on the other end and they're good to go.
Yeah, just like flying.
Yeah. And so that the whole bulk of the story is, I think, quite boring because it is just the whole history of the jaunt. And then the very end is the horror aspect, which I like. But and basically what the horror aspect is, the son realizes that, right? Because he hears the story. It's the stupid father's fault. If he hadn't gone down the history of this, they wouldn't even have happened. The son was like, oh, okay, well, the rats like experience, like what did the rats experience when they were awake, you know, during the jaunt? And so the doctors.
Oh, no, I think I know where this is going.
Yeah, I think I've seen this in other media, too. The doctors come by and they have like this gas mask that they put on you, you know, for a couple seconds so you can knock out. And then they put you in whatever device you need to be put into, then be teleported to your destination. They administer it to the dad, to the son, to the mother and the sister. And then in an instant, they show up on the other end. The dad wakes up a little groggy and then the wife. No, he wakes up to his wife's screams. He goes over and he sees his son, and his son has like this weird look in his eyes. And it's because his son held his breath while they were administering the gas, because he wanted to see what did people see in the middle of jaunting. And essentially, even though for the human body it's instantaneous teleportation, in reality, it's like an eternity for the mind if it's awake. And so the son has lived mentally for years and years and centuries and what seems like an eternity. And the son is just there with his eyes glazed over. And he's just maniacally laughing like, I have seen like the face of God or something. And that idea is such a horrifying one. But unfortunately, that's like the very end of the short story. It's like the last page. And everything else is like, you know, mundane. But I saw online, nominate that as like the best story out of the entire collection. But the second main story that I'm going to talk about, which is the whole reason as to why I read this, is The Monkey.
The Monkey?
And The Monkey.
That sounds ominous. That wasn't your favorite story.
Yeah, monkeys are, we have a whole episode on that. Monkeys are scary. So in this story, which is the story I was most excited for. I was more excited than The Mist going into this, and I was a little disappointed, I guess, but I'll talk about it nonetheless. So in The Monkey, I'm sure you've seen, you know, that little toy monkey with the symbols that you crank up.
Yeah, I think it was even in Toy Story.
Yes, it was in that was the reference I was going to make. Toy Story 3. That is a very creepy looking little monkey. Even in Toy Story 3. He is scary in Toy Story 3 because he's the one looking at the security tapes as they're trying to escape the...
Yeah, the all-seeing eye.
Yes. Oh, dude. He's a freaky monkey. And I'm not the only one, it seems. It seems that everyone kind of thinks that kind of monkey is...
I don't know who the fuck thought that was a cool toy to make, honestly.
I don't know. Because he's also in, if you ever watch the Conjuring movies, in the lair where the Warrens have Annabelle and all of these
other... Oh, yeah, I think they have one.
Have one there. And in a horror movie that came out earlier this year called Oddity, there's this woman who has this shop of, like, weird haunted items or whatnot. There's a monkey toy of that toy in there, too. So... clearly there's something that people find odd about this monkey, and I do too. I've always thought this monkey was a little spooky looking. Basically the story is, there is this guy who, he has kids, right? This family, they're cleaning out their attic or whatnot, and the son finds something in his dad, in the dad's old junk, and he's like, oh dad, look at this toy. And it's a toy monkey. And the dad sees it and he's like, oh no, like, not that damn monkey. And
it's him again.
It's basically one of those stories where you have to go back to see, like, what did the father experience with this monkey as a little kid. And so the father, as a little kid, had found this monkey in his own, you know, house growing up. And he didn't have a father because his father was a sailor who sailed to various countries and brought back a bunch of knickknacks from other countries. And so this, I forget where they say this monkey came from, but, and he always thought that this monkey had this cursed look on its face. But it was a broken monkey. The little wind up thing didn't work. So he couldn't, like, hit its symbols together or whatnot. And so he was like, oh, well, this is a broken toy that my dad had brought or whatever. You know, I don't know what I'm going to do with it. Put it away or whatever. And so he has his babysitter and whatnot. And the babysitter babysits him and whatever. And then that night, as he's going to sleep, his mother's already back. In the midst of his sleep, he's woken up to the monkey hitting its cymbals together. Like it's been wound up and it's, you know, doing its thing. And the boy looks at the monkey and it's just dead, glazed over look on the monkey as it's just staring straight at the boy. I love the imagery of it as he's like hitting his cymbals together, like the boy looking at it as if the monkey knows, like, you can't stop this. And the boy, he doesn't know why he's freaked out by this. Maybe because, like, who could have wound it up or whatever. He wakes up the next morning and his mother's like, oh, like, we need a new babysitter. And he's like, oh, why is that? And it turns out that his babysitter in the middle of the night had been shot. She'd been shot, like, just on her own street.
Jesus.
And he's like, oh, that's kind of, like, weird. And there's a bunch of coincidences of people dying. And it's usually after the monkey has usually just randomly, like, started, you know, hitting its symbols together. And the boy begins to put it together that... it might be because of this toy monkey. And so he tries to, it's the classic thing where you try to dispose of the toy. You come back to the house. It's somehow already there on the shelf again or whatever. And he tries to get rid of it. He tries everything. He you know, tries to bury it, tries to burn it or whatever. And it always comes back. And at night, like, and randomly, it'll start hitting its symbols together. And he's like, what do you want? Like, why, like, what have you come back for? Like, just go away. And I forget how they dispose of the monkey when he's a little child, but now that he's an adult, it's back. And he tells his son, like, we have to dispose of this. I believe he threw it away in a well or something when he was a kid. And so basically the whole story is him trying to dispose of the lake, and he eventually disposes of it in a pond or something. He goes on a boat and he disposes the monkey in a lake or something, and it drowns to the bottom of the lake. And then, you know, in the newspapers the next day, there's a lot of reports of fishermen going out to the lake, and suddenly there's all these fish that are floating. Like, it seems like the whole pond is just, or the whole lake, like, it seems like all the sea life has just died, and all of the fish are just floating at the top of the lake now. So I guess the monkey just kills people or life, or like any life around just, like, it every time it like
annihilates. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was excited going into that story, but the way it's, I don't know, the way it's narrated at points, it's really good, but it felt kind of unsatisfying. I don't know. It just felt kind of bland. And the reason why I was excited going into this, aside from the monkey imagery being, you know, kind of spooky, is because this short story is being adapted next year in a movie coming out early next year, directed by Osgood Perkins, who's the guy who directed Long Legs. So the guy who did Long Legs is going to be directing the monkey. And there's already a teaser trailer out there. The only difference being that the monkey, instead of having cymbals, he has a little drum that he like struts or something. And it's in the teaser trailer. He just goes like, rat, tat, tat, tat.
And so I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
And I'll check that out after this.
And I was like, oh man, I'm so excited because I really like Long Legs. So let me check out the story.
Yeah, it's a really good movie.
Based on. And I was let down by the story. I ended up really liking them. I'm glad I read the book regardless, because I ended up really liking The Mist more than I thought I would have. Because I was like, I've already seen the movie. Like, you know, I'm not going to, I don't know, be wowed by it. But I was wowed by it. But I wasn't wowed by the monkey, but it was interesting. To me, though, like, I'm still excited for the movie. I'm cautiously optimistic about the movie. I hope it's a case where The Black Phone, right, is based off of a short story. The Black Phone short story, there's not much to it. Like, in the story, the grabber doesn't have a mask, you know, that, like, horned mask he has. There's a lot of stuff that's not in the book that they added the movie, and it really, like, elevates the movie. I hope they do that. I hope they, like, give the movie some oomph that the story is lacking. But that's the whole reason why I even read the entire book, because I was like, I want to know the story about this monkey, because I'm excited for the monkey movie coming out next year. And yeah, that's basically it. There's a couple other stories in here that I read. I wasn't wowed by any of them. There's a story called Cain Rose Up. It was like 3 pages long, and it's about a school shooter. I was like, hello?
Jesus.
It's you're reading the story through the perspective of this kid who just woke up one day and was like, today's the day, you know, it's the day that like college is being let out, you know, people are going, leaving their dorms, you know, for, I don't know, summer or whatever. And he's the last one on his floor or something. And he basically walks to his closet and pulls out a gun. And then like someone knocks on his door and he has to hide it under the bed. And I was reading this the whole time going like, oh, man, I hope this is not going the direction it's going to go. I hope it's not going the direction it's going to go. And some kid, he answers the door, and some kid's like, oh, I just wanted to let you know I'm like returning something or whatever. Or I forget whatever it was. Yeah. There was some weird interaction. And I'm not going to call him the protagonist. The character that we're following, he has this dead look and he doesn't care about the conversation. And he's like, yeah, yeah. And I was reading this like, oh, no, please, Steven, please, like, pull a twist or something. Like, please, you know, swerve my expectations here. And then the kid leaves and he's like, yeah, like, and he goes back to his bed, pulls out the gun, loads it up, goes to the window and points it out at the quad area. And he begins pulling the trigger. And I was reading it like, oh, my God, what am I reading, Stephen King? That was not a very good story. That's probably the worst story in here.
That's a bit of a, that's kind of out of left field. Damn, I didn't expect that one.
I've heard that he used to write a lot about school shootings, from what I've heard. I do know that there's
I don't like that.
I know. I was like, what? I do. He has written questionable things, though. The ending of It, if people know, that's
borderline criminal.
Yeah, so he has been known to write some very.
He's kind of a weird guy.
Yeah, very weird guy. Which is why I have no interest in reading It, because I do not want to read that. But
yeah, not to mention just how long.
Yeah, but I did hear that there was this book once that he wrote called Rage. I believe it's Rage. Actually, let me double check. And oh yeah, it's called Rage. There's this book called Rage that he wrote back in the 70s, and it's all about a school shooting. It's a whole novel. It's not a short story, and it's just about the school shooter. And it the reason why you don't hear about this often is because actual school shooters in real life have quoted the book. And so this book it's been pulled, and I believe he regrets ever having written that story. And that's why you never hear about Rage. And I did not know about this. And it makes me, until I began looking into some of that. I have also kind of reevaluated some of his other works. Like, I really like Carrie, but I was wondering the other day, could Carrie be seen as like an analogy for school shootings? Because it's this girl who's being bullied by the school and everyone around her. And the end of the movie is her taking out the entire school with her powers in the gym, you know, during prom and burning everything down, you know, like, and I was like, oh, even if you're getting bullied, like, you should not like.
Now it's, yeah, I think it's kind of a human. Yeah. Don't end people's lives because you're being bullied.
And
I mean, that includes your own.
Like, yeah.
I can definitely see how these could be seen as problematic.
Yeah. And I couldn't stop helping but I couldn't stop thinking of Carrie like that now. And it's like, oh man, I don't know. Maybe was he in the right headspace when he was writing some of this?
Probably not. To be fair.
But so this is a book we've covered. This might be the only book we ever cover. But I have aside from wanting to read this and cover it because I was excited for the monkey, I have been on a horror book binge, kind of. I'm going to end the episode soon. It shouldn't be that long. But I just want to wrap it up really quickly by saying I have found myself kind of, I don't know, feeling horror fatigue for like horror movies, like a lot, and just horror stuff in general. Like, I've been pushing fall down like the line, like get over there. I'm enjoying my summer too much. I don't know. I don't want to do. I feel like I've burned myself out on horror stuff. But for some reason,
I could see that
horror books is what's doing it for me. Because it's an avenue I've never really delved into. So for this whole month, I've decided to read a couple horror books. And let me just read some of these out for you really quickly. So I decided to read six books total. The first one was Skeleton Crew, which I already did. Questionable stories in there, but there's one really good, The Mist, that I recommend people should check out. The second one is The Shining, which I've already finished, and Alex, let me tell you, it is good. It is probably a 10 out of 10 book. The Shining, like, holy hell, dude, it is so good.
I have to check it out.
Yes, I would recommend listening to it via an audiobook, because I tried reading, so that's how I'm going through all these books. I tried reading it like traditionally through a physical copy, and even digitally, like a PDF, and I find myself getting distracted. And with an audiobook, you can do chores, like you can wash the dishes, you can do whatever, go for a jog, and you'll still be, the story will still be read to you. So I would highly recommend, you know, especially if I would highly recommend doing an audiobook, especially if you're, you know, doing a bunch of like stuff or whatnot, or you find you don't have enough time to read the book itself. But it's a breezy book. It's like 300 or so pages, but before you know it, you've gone through the whole thing, and it's really good. It is so good. I am close to finishing Doctor Sleep, which is the sequel to The Shining. Completely different than The Shining, even the way it's told. It's taking me a lot longer to get through it. But it's, I know, I do recognize he's writing this like 40 years after the original Shining book and whatnot. It's a completely different story. But I'm almost done with that. That's my third book. My fourth book, I tried not to put as much Stephen King in here, but I unfortunately found myself putting a lot of Stephen King in here. The fourth book is Salem's Lot. I really want to read Salem's Lot because for multiple reasons, the only version of Salem's Lot.
One obvious one.
Yeah. It's Salem's Lot is one of his big, you know, stories. It's like The Shining, Carrie. It's everybody knows Salem's Lot. I wanted to read it because the only version of Salem's Lot that I know is the old movie or miniseries or whatever it is. It's like 3 hours long from the 80s or 90s, which I found to be kind of boring. And so I want to read the source material and because I know the story is good. And also because there's a new Salem's Lot movie coming out on HBO Max early October. So, and it is like, it's way shorter than the original Salem's Lot adaptation. It's like an hour or close to 2 hours or something like that. So I'll definitely be checking that out. I wanted to finish the book before the movie comes out, but the movie comes out like the 3rd of October, which is in like 3 days. So, or by the time this episode releases, maybe Salem's Lot will have already released anyways. So, I will get to Salem's Lot. That'll be the fourth Stephen King book I get to. Oh, and fun fact for our listeners, Salem's Lot is where I got the name of the podcast for. I know people would probably assume Salem as in Salem, Massachusetts, but I got it from there because it's not Salem Station. It's Salem's, as in Salem apostrophe S station, as in Salem's Lot, Salem apostrophe S Lot. That's specifically where I got the title of the podcast for.
Please don't sue us.
So fun little fact for our audience there. The fifth book I want to read is, it's in Spanish. Las cosas que perdimos en el fuego. The things we lost in the fire. The
things we lost in the fire.
Made by Mariana Enriquez. I want to also read a lot of horror in Spanish as well. And so I'm getting into that as well. And that also, I believe, is a collection.
Spanish horror is fun.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard there's a lot of good.
Yeah, it's a unique level of terror and horror.
Yeah, yeah. And that is also, I believe, a collection of short stories. So I will eventually, when I do finish the story, I'll include it in some episode, like a little review of what I feel about the book and what stories I would recommend. So if people are curious, I'll give at some point later down the line my review of that. And then the last book is When the Reckoning Comes by LaTanya McQueen. And this takes place in the South, and it is about ghosts in the South, in like the South of like the U.S., you know, like that region. And a lot of it's got Get Out vibes. And it takes place on a plantation, and it's very spooky. And I've heard it's really, really good. So I will be checking that out. So those are the six books. That's what I'm going to be doing all October, reading these six. Two down, four left to go. What about you, Alex? What are you excited for? Not excited for?
Honestly, haven't been too much into the horror space recently.
I feel that.
Excited to get back into it with fall.
Hopefully
there's some solid releases.
For
the spooky season.
I'm looking forward to Salem's Lot, dude. I can't wait for that. Also, Smile 2, I've heard, is coming out.
Ooh, that'll soon. Be an interesting one.
So it'd be interesting to check that one out. Maybe if I finish.
Yeah.
Maybe if I finish The Shining book, we can cover maybe not the movie, but the miniseries that came out. Maybe not. I don't know.
There's a miniseries?
Yeah, there's a Stephen. You know how Stephen King hates The Shining, the movie? He had that thing readapted. God damn it. Readapted. And there's a more questionable version of The Shining out there. Yeah. Or we could cover Dr. Sleep. That's not on my list either. I'm almost done with the book. Maybe we can cover that also as well, or whatever. Anyways, that's it. I just wanted to cover that really quickly. A very short episode. And see you guys all on the Witching Hour. Bye-bye. Oh, I'll have timestamps below in the description. So if you want to skip spoilers on certain stories, you can. I should have said that at the beginning of the episode. Too late. Whoops. But timestamps will be in the description below. See you guys everywhere else on the whatever episode we do next. Bye.
I love you.